Okay, thanks a lot, Dave, and thanks for the opportunity to speak to you guys today. What I'm going to do with the time I've got is actually a bit different to what I have done in the past, and many of you have probably seen some of my earlier presentations looking at the impacts of climate change on mountain pine beetle. And instead, I'm going to flip that over and attempt to look at the impacts of mountain pine beetle on climate change. To do that, I'm first going to start with a bit of an overview of the relevance that herbivory and forests has to carbon dynamics, and I want to do that by running a few simulations through a carbon budget model that we've developed at the Canadian Forest Service. And then I'll turn my attention to the mountain pine beetle proper, give you a bit of an update on what is the current situation with regards to mountain pine beetle and its impacts, economic primarily, and then talk about future impacts by way of carbon dynamics and finally the implications to the global climate system. And then I'll wrap it up. Now, we know that forested landscapes tend to be fairly diverse, and they're diverse simply because of natural disturbance. And natural disturbances tend to lead to a diversity of species and stand ages across a landscape. And as a consequence, under a longer-term constant disturbance regime, you'll find that the carbon balance within these forests tends to approach zero. Forests grow, forests fall down, forests grow again. And the natural disturbance agents that lead to this balance, this long-term balance, typically in our North American forests, are both wildfire and insect pests and diseases, as we know. Now, we have seen and documented recently extensive outbreaks of a variety of different species, particularly in Western North America, and we start to call these unprecedented in their size and severity. And certainly on the left there, you can see mountain pine beetle, spruce beetle, and pinionips, as Chris mentioned earlier, doing their damage across much of Western North America. And a lot of questions start to evolve from these sorts of data. You know, is it associated with climate change or something else? Is it increasing the release of carbon to the atmosphere? And of course, the big one, if that's the case, then is there potentially a positive feedback loop evolving that's leading to increased greenhouse gas accumulation and additional warming? The real important point that you have to make when it comes to these types of questions is that herbivory is really only relevant to carbon dynamics and climate change if there is actually a net increase over time. In other words, an increase in the frequency, an increase in the severity, or the duration of these impacts. And so what I want to do, as I indicated at the outset there, is give you a bit of an idea of how important this is by way of some simulations through the carbon budget model by the Canadian forest sector. So the CBM CFS3 is the latest version of the carbon budget model developed by the Canadian Forest Service, and it's a stand and landscape level model of forest carbon dynamics, and it accounts for all of the carbon stocks that are required under the Kyoto Protocol as well as the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change reporting guidelines. It includes above ground biomass, below ground biomass, deadwood, litter, and soil carbon. And it also explicitly accounts for harvesting, insect disease impacts, wildfire, and fuel consumption. And without going into the guts of this, I'll just show you. This is the pool structure within the carbon budget model. And it has in it your above-ground biomass, as I mentioned, your dead organic matter in the variable state, as well as the stable dead organic matter. And it deals with the fluxes of carbon between these various pools and the atmosphere. To run these simulations, we just began with a hypothetical landscape, and in this landscape, we just roughly set it about 100,000 hectares in size, and we have a forest growing on it that has a single growth curve, as you can see here. And what we do is we apply to this landscape an outbreak that starts in year 80, and that outbreak results in some mortality and growth reduction, as we all know very well, and the curve is adjusted accordingly. Now the thing is, we also have a fairly dynamic landscape, and this landscape also includes a fire. And that fire has a 100-year fire return interval. In other words, 1% of the area burns in each and every year. And this leads to a negative exponential age class structure at the start of the simulation. Then we add insects to our eligible stands. And so what we have is a baseline run against which we can compare changes in frequency, severity, and duration. And this is our baseline simulation. In this particular baseline simulation, we're going to compare against 25% of all of our stands are eligible to be disturbed. The duration of the outbreak is about 10 years, and the interval between the outbreaks is roughly about 25 years. The first curve here is just showing the total biomass carbon changes over time, dead organic matter carbon changes over time. And the real big one, and this is the one I'm going to direct your attention to in each of the subsequent slides, is the ecosystem carbon. And essentially, over the longer run, and if we extend this beyond 200 years, you'd find things stabilizing roughly at about 340 tons of carbon per hectare. This is what we'd expect over a long-term average. Now, what happens when we change things? If we increase the frequency of outbreaks, for example, and in this case, what we'll do, to give you an idea, is change the outbreak interval from once every 25 years to every 15 years. And what you'll find immediately when we run the simulation under this changed regime is that we lead to a loss of carbon from the system, roughly about 4 tons per hectare. If we take and change the duration of the outbreak, in this case, we actually allow outbreaks to go for about 15 years. And given that we have to keep things in balance, that means we have to increase the eligible age classes disturbed as well as diminish the outbreak interval. What you'll see is there, suddenly we have actually a loss of carbon to the system of roughly 6 tons per hectare. It gets worse if we actually change the severity. In fact, if we allow, rather than 25% of eligible age classes to be disturbed, we increase that to 50, immediately you'll find that suddenly we've got a loss of a little over 12 tons of carbon per hectare from the system. And finally, if we actually change things such that we actually increase the eligible age classes available for disturbance and then reduce the outbreak interval, it gets worse again and we get ourselves a loss of somewhere in the neighborhood of 17 tons of carbon per hectare. The reason why I want to show you this is that we have to have some sort of change in the way the system works to have a net loss of carbon to the system and a net increase in the amount of atmospheric carbon available to affect climate change. So in terms of herbivory and climate change, as I said, we have to have an increased frequency, severity, or duration of impacts in order for there to be a long-term change in atmospheric carbon. Let's switch our look now to mountain pine beetle. And as you all know, we have the largest outbreak in recorded history happening in Western North America, particularly in Western Canada. And in fact, we have projected that we will lose the majority of our mature pine over a very large area in the next 3 or 4 years. The question is, what relevance has this got to carbon dynamics in the current situation? So here's how things look as at the end of 2007, and you can see that, you know, we've had outbreaks before. We all know this. We've had 3 or 4 big ones in the last century or so, and in fact, the last big one ending around the mid-80s led to the mortality of roughly pine spread over about 1.5 million hectares, the biggest we'd ever seen. Well, as at the end of 2007, we beat 10 million hectares. In fact, if you were to draw a line around the big red blob in the center of that slide on the right, you'd find that we have mortality in all severity classes, mind you, spread over about 14 million hectares, or roughly 36 million acres of pine forests. Some of the work that we've done in conjunction with the BC Ministry of Forests, we project that this will lead to somewhere in the neighborhood of 75% to 80% mortality of all mature pine in British Columbia by 2015. So it's a big deal. Some of these economic impacts, just for interest's sake, suggest that to this date we've lost roughly 750 million cubic meters of wood. And that three quarters of a billion cubic meters is about 12 years of harvest in BC's interior. It's over 5.5 times Canada's annual softwood lumber production. Of course, this is when you guys were buying wood from us. That's changed a lot. It's roughly equivalent to about 11 million homes. Or 5.5 years of housing starts again when you guys were building houses. So things have changed pretty dramatically. What impacts has this got with regards to carbon dynamics? Well, of course, dead trees don't take up carbon, and worse, dead trees actually decay and release carbon. And so this is the major question that we've attempted to address, and is that is this impact sufficient to actually cause a feedback to the global climate system? And here we employed the carbon budget model once again. And we've actually utilized this model and applied it to this area here, the study area, which is primarily the large central portion of the outbreak, about 374,000 square kilometers of productive forest dominated by pine and to a lesser degree spruce. And to get an idea of what the total cumulative impacts will be, we run a simulation forward to 2020. We don't want a crystal ball any later than that simply because we don't have a really solid idea what it means further than that. And we developed regional probability distribution functions and ran some Monte Carlo simulations based upon a number of regions, 5 in fact for the mountain pine beetle. And we based these regional probability distribution functions of outcomes on spatial and temporal outbreak dynamics given the history of mountain pine beetle through the last 40 or 50 years. Mortality and host statistics around the current outbreak, obviously, the status of the remaining host in these regions, as well as expert judgment. Well, we also included the impacts of fire and harvesting. Fire we actually applied to 3 distinct regions here, and we actually simulated fire based upon the large fire database we have in Canada on fire occurrence, the area burned, and the severity in these areas. And finally, we also included harvesting in our simulations based upon the local management plans that are in place. And so given these probability distribution functions and our Monte Carlo simulations, we were able to sort of project forward what we expect the outbreak to look like by its end at 2020. And this is what we see here. We see that things are going to peak and decline. And in fact, you can see that we started this simulation based upon 2005 moving forward. And in fact, it's just about spot on as to what we're seeing on the landscape given the last couple of years. But what we had to do is take this and translate it into the level of impact we had in each region. And we did that based upon the range of possible outbreak durations for each region, the total of area available as host, the area infested to date based upon current and past outbreaks, as well as the rate of expansion and contraction of the outbreak. And this is the sort of thing that comes from we actually can then classify the levels of impact in each region based upon our runs. So what does this mean in terms of ecosystem carbon and carbon release to the atmosphere? Well, this is how it looks projecting forward in time. And the first thing you should take from this is that you can see that in 2002 and earlier, the forests were a small but significant sink for carbon in and around our study area, but that things started to drop off quite dramatically. I should point out too here that 2003, this low spike here is a consequence of a real bad fire year that occurred in 2003. You notice that the forests have been a large carbon source, or are projected to be, from 2003 right through to the end of 2020. In fact, it's a mean loss of carbon to the atmosphere of roughly about 17.5 to 18 megatons of carbon per year. There is a tendency for there to be a recovery post-outbreak, but not to pre-outbreak levels, at least not at the end of the simulation. So it's going to take a lot longer than another decade or so before we start seeing a forest back that is fixing carbon to the same degree as it was prior to the outbreak. With this approach, we're also able to partition out individual impacts, and of course the one of interest is that associated with mountain pine beetles. So I show you here the run which excludes mountain pine beetle, which I'll call the control, and this is just showing how the forests would look in the absence of mountain pine beetle based upon just fire and harvesting statistics. And you can see that we have this loss of carbon in 2003 as a consequence of that bad fire year, but everything seems to recover and the forest maintained itself as a reasonably good sink into the future. However, when we add mountain pine beetle to the mix, things have changed quite dramatically. And what you're seeing here is just the impact of mountain pine beetle alone. And we expect the peak in terms of carbon loss to the atmosphere to occur in around 2009, about 20 megatons of carbon loss to the atmosphere in that year alone. The interesting thing, and I want to point this out, is that the average annual emissions from wildfire for the entire country based upon statistics from 1959 to 99, is about 27 megatons of carbon. So we're talking impacts in mountain pine beetle, British Columbia alone, that are roughly of the same magnitude of wildfire for the whole country. It's enormous. The total amount of carbon lost to the atmosphere is roughly, over the whole run, is about 270 megatons of carbon, and this is equivalent to about 5 years of emissions from the entire transportation sector for all of Canada. So it's big. What's interesting is we also did a run where we included the impacts of salvage harvesting. There's lots of dead trees over the landscape, and there's lots of intentions to go out and cut them. What this actually means is an additional loss of an extra 50 megatons of carbon to the atmosphere as a consequence of the removal of living trees as well as damage to the understory and underbrush. Okay, so we come back to this whole issue of whether or not we can positively speak to a feedback to climate change. And as I said earlier, it's only possible if we have a net increase in the size of the impacts. Well, it's not hard to think that this is indeed an unprecedented outbreak. It's certainly a lot to say that there is, just based upon the shape of this particular curve. This is a hard question to actually answer, but there are a number of things that point to this being unprecedented and hence potential feedback to climate change. And really, there's a net increase in disturbance as a consequence of first, an abundance of susceptible hosts, and secondly, a whole bunch of climate that is favoring beetle survival. And just to show you in summary some of the results of some work I've done earlier, where we simulated the age class structure of the forest backwards in time. Essentially, at the start of the current outbreak, we had about three times as much mature pine over the landscape as we had 100 years ago. And this is a consequence of fire suppression. We've virtually removed fire from the environment. At the same time, we practiced selective harvesting, leaving lodgepole behind on the landscape. Things have been getting warmer too. In fact, over much of the area, we've had a warming of roughly 1 to 2 degrees, which has increased mountain pine beetle survival and increased the range of climatically suitable habitats, which has been subsequently followed by rapid range expansion by mountain pine beetle to the area. So to wrap it up then, mountain pine beetle has actually caused very large carbon emissions to the atmosphere. In fact, it's converted the forest from a sink to a large source over much of British Columbia. The impacts are similar in magnitude to the average annual emissions from fire for all of Canada, and equivalent to roughly 5 years of emissions from the transportation sector for the country. The outbreak is very likely unprecedented in the sense that it has been exacerbated by forest management activities, largely through fire suppression and selective harvesting, and climate change itself, which has improved beetle survival and improved the range of forests for the pine beetle. The ultimate conclusion is that this very likely comprises a very strong positive feedback to the global climate system. Thanks.
We have a few minutes, so do you have any questions for Alan?
Jesse.
I missed it, Alan, but it seems like the regeneration of forests is also really an important component.
Yeah.
And, you know, when I think regeneration in logical pine, I think fire, obviously. So what impact does this huge outbreak and regeneration, how does that feed into the picture? Was it included?
The carbon budget model explicitly includes regenerating forests. The impact that the complex interaction of the outbreak, fire, and subsequent regen, I'd say, is probably not a subtlety the model is dealing with. Certainly in areas where we've got large, extensive areas of pure pine without a subsequent fire, I would say we're probably going to have a stagnant regeneration pattern, which I've seen, say, in the Waterton Lakes National Parks in southwestern Alberta. In areas where we've got mixed stands and we've got a significant advanced regen of other species, that's a different situation altogether. It's very, very site-specific.
So the impact may be even greater than your model is what?
Yes, absolutely.
Alan, in terms of salvage, the dead tree is no longer storing additional carbon. But if it's made into a long-term forest product, it's really not releasing much carbon over time?
Absolutely, and in fact, that's one potential mitigation action where forest products can be derived from these dead trees, which then, in and of itself, don't lead to immediate release of carbon to the atmosphere. Unfortunately, with a downturn in the economy, of course, we're not harvesting many of these trees at all, so it's not long before much of the window of opportunity is going to be lost, and most of this stuff is not going to be merchantable. Oh yeah. There's lots of money across all governmental jurisdictions being aimed at protecting communities and diminishing fire. The interesting thing is that over a large part of the outbreak in the north that is finished now, it's been done for 3, 4, 5 years in a lot of areas. Those trees have shed the fine fuels from their crowns and aren't much of a fire risk as we speak. So the longer we hold on without a big one, the less likely it becomes.
Anyone else? Still a couple minutes? All righty. Thanks, Alan.
Thanks.